Genealogy has been popular for hundreds, even thousands of years.
And much more recently, millions of people have sent in DNA samples to learn more about their genetic background and who's in their family.
William Irvine is a professor of philosophy at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He's always been fascinated by science and set out to look at how each of us came into existence, which he explains in his book, You, A Natural History. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for asking.
So your book is titled You, A Natural History. Which scientific disciplines did you examine to pull together this story?
A whole bunch. I drew from many different areas. I drew from biology. I drew from astronomy. I drew from geology. The idea was to give as complete an idea of your history as I could. And, of course, we think of you as a person, but that's only one of the ways we can see you. You're also, for instance, a member of a species. You're a collection of cells. You're a collection of atoms. And so to give the complete picture of you, it requires a lot of science.
I think it's really interesting that you named it you, not us or humankind. Why really speak to the potential reader in that way?
When I wrote the book, I mean, it really was a very person-centric kind of approach. And I wondered, well, where did I come from? How did I come to be here? What was the process that happened? And so, you know, ideally that when readers read this book, they're going to be doing the same, except they're going to be doing it with respect to themselves. So, as I've said, they have a long and very interested and convoluted history because they aren't one entity. They're multiple entities that happen to be fused together. So I'm hoping they take it personally.
In the best possible way. And I find this fascinating. You are a philosopher. You are not someone who is in one of these scientific traditions that you rely on for this book. How did you, as a philosopher, come to write it?
I think I'm a philosopher in the ancient sense of the word. You know, if you go back to the ancient Greek and Roman philosophers, for instance, they had an interest in philosophy, but they also were polymaths in the sense that they were also interested in science, for instance. They were interested in math. They were interested in logic. And so this book, I've had a lifelong interest in science, decided that I would end up doing philosophy instead, but have had this burning background interest. And, you know, philosophy raises these meaning of life sort of questions. And you can look to science for the answers. And so I was kind of working that seam between science and philosophy. So how did I get here? And, you know, the idea is maybe if you knew that, you'd have some idea of why you're here and what exactly this is all about. So that's how kind of philosophy and science unite.
There are so many fascinating concepts and ideas in your book, and unfortunately, we'll only have time to look at a few. Now, I am not trained in science, and until a recent interview we did with David Quammen about his book, The Tangled Tree, I had a very simplistic and, it turns out, inaccurate view of how species develop. And you say that not only are all human beings related, but any two living organisms have an ancestor in common if you go back far enough. How is that possible?
Well, the evidence that has to be the case is we all use DNA, and the DNA uses the same code for decoding our DNA and turning it into stuff, into the things we know. The only way things could share that same code is if they all had inherited that code from some distant ancestor. So it's smoking gun evidence that we do have an ancestor in common. And then after that, it becomes this interesting question of how far back do you have to go to find that ancestor? And you have to go pretty far back. I mean, it would be a single-celled organism of some kind. And so you're going back billions of years. You know, but each of your cells, you know, I told you, you can think of yourself as a cellular creature, as a collection of cells. Each of those cells can trace its origin back to some cell billions of years ago. That cell has been alive and reproducing. ever since, and we're just the collection of the current manifestation of that cell. But it's interesting. You know, I mean, the other interesting thing is any two people are also related. It's just a question of how far back you have to go to find a common ancestor.
We're talking with William Irvine. He's professor of philosophy at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. And we're talking about his most recent book, which is titled You, A Natural History. So we're talking about something that's referred to as the last universal common ancestor, and that is where every living organism came from. How are scientists able to trace that?
Okay, one thing you can do is you can look for similarities. I mean, so we are, if you look at animals, we're most similar to chimpanzees. So the assumption is that we had a common ancestor with them. And what has helped that process along is the DNA research that's been done. And now we can go around and look at the DNA of all these different species and then look for resemblances in the DNA. So we share a large amount of our DNA with chimpanzees, you know, and the way that would happen is if we had an ancestor in common. The ancestor, by the way, it wouldn't have been either a member of the species Homo sapiens, nor would it have been a chimpanzee. It would have been some other kind of organism, presumably, that evolved into itself, that evolved into humans and into chimpanzees. But we have, you know, it's estimated 98% of our DNA in common with chimpanzees, and the only way that could happen is if we had a fairly recent ancestor in common. Much the same way, think about you and your siblings, if you have any. There's going to be a strong family resemblance, and if you did your DNA test, you'd find a remarkable degree of similarity between the DNA that you had. So a species, it kind of works the same way.
So the last universal common ancestor is what all organisms have in common. And then those of us who are in that Homo sapien category, we have most recent common ancestors with, for instance, chimpanzees. So that's kind of a subset of the last universal common ancestor.
Right. And then you could go back. You could pick, if you could do the deep history of every single living organism, you would finally go back to about 4 billion years ago. It would have been a cellular organism and or a cellular species of organism that, you know, if something had happened to it, God forbid, none of the current species would be here now. There'd be maybe other different species here, but not the ones we know and love.
So that's really interesting, because in reading that, it felt almost like a sci-fi novel plot line. What happened if the ancestor that we all have didn't exist? Either something happened before it could reproduce, or reproduction wasn't successful. So you said there might have been then other species. So is it kind of like a story where there are these alternate possible universes? So Earth could look completely different if one of those organisms wasn't successful.
Sure. That's another thing that comes out of the research for this book, just how remarkably contingent our planet and the living things on our planet are. For instance, it's estimated that several hundred million years after our planet came into existence, it was hit by another planet. If that hadn't happened, we wouldn't have a moon. If we didn't have a moon, we wouldn't have the tides. If we didn't have the tides, that would have affected how life evolved. So it's a strange kind of thing. What looks like a disaster early in our history was actually an event that helped everything that happened after that. And the same is true. You know, you have all of these little accidents happening that got us to where we are now. And, of course, you wouldn't be here if your father hadn't met your mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they hadn't gotten together. You wouldn't be here, and it could have been an accident of two people, same place, same time. So we live in a highly contingent universe, and that can make you really nervous. But that should also make you just think, isn't this a wonderful place? That through all that process, we have what we have today.
Well, and Bill, that actually brings me to the last question I wanted to ask you, which is how amazing and unlikely is it that any one of us is actually here on Earth today?
Yep, it's a long shot. And then, you know, you think, does that make us incredibly special? Well, we are special, but there's a good chance that because the universe is such an absolutely huge place, that we aren't the only place it's happened. I mean, you know, you go into a casino and you ask, what's the chance of, you know, the number 17 coming up on roulette 5 times in a row? Well, gee, that would be almost impossible. But if you have billions and billions and billions of casinos, on one of those each night, that's going to happen. And that's kind of the math of our universe.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for sharing your really fascinating book and explaining how we got here.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Bill Irvine is professor of philosophy at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He's a best-selling author and joined us to talk about his most recent book titled You, A Natural History.